SSSSEEEEEQQQQUUUUUEEEEELLLL sequel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Sequel Cast. The Sequel Cast is a show where we talk about movies in a franchise, one movie at a time. I'm your host, Matt. Sabrina is not with me this week because originally we were supposed to cover the two Basic Instinct films, and we're going to do that starting next week instead. What happened is we have the 4th of July weekend. So in the United States, 4th of July is our holiday of independence. A lot of people were going on vacation, myself included. I'm going to a beach off the coast of Oregon. Should be a lot of fun. So, and because it's difficult to schedule people in the studio, I'm recording this episode for my new swanky home studio setup. So it should sound better than the old school sequel cast episodes as far as audio quality goes. So we'll see. So this is a special episode. I thought it would be fun to take a look at me doing quick hits of the video game movies over the years that had sequels. And I'll cover a few that didn't have sequels for various reasons, but we'll see how far we get. It should be a lot of fun. As I was compiling this list, basing it off a Wikipedia list, there's really a lot more sequels to video game movies than I was expecting. I did not think that many different ones were made, but there were. And even though these video game movies typically don't make a huge amount of money at the box office, they must be selling well on DVD and Blu-ray and stuff, because they keep the budgets pretty low and they keep on making them. You know, if all these things lost shitloads of money, you would not be seeing any video game movies being made, period. And they still are. Overall, do I think they're getting better in quality? They're getting more of a budget. I think they look nicer. Right off the top, my favorite video game movie of all time is Silent Hill. I think it captures the creepy essence of the video games. It actually uses music from Silent Hill 1 through 4 in there, which is pretty neat. And it has a nice surrealism and horror that's pretty unique for that genre. It feels like the game, even if the plot isn't exactly the same. And I think you could be a fan of horror films or a fan of like David Lynch stuff and really get into that first Silent Hill movie. So video game movies. Let's start by talking about the very first, you know, big budget live action one that was made. It was Super Mario Brothers, released in 93. I saw this one in the theater, and I was had just moved to Georgia from Virginia at the time. I was finishing up fifth grade, I believe, and I saw it with my dad in the theater. And afterwards, I thought, that was weird. And now I still think about it. It's weird, but they had a lot of money for like the first big Hollywood, big budget video game movie. This film was directed by Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel, a husband-wife team who worked on shows like Max Headroom. And they got fired at a certain point in the production, and producer Roland Joffe was one of the people that took over as director. This movie also had two different directors of cinematography, which is unusual. You know, it was sort of a troubled production as far as it kept on costing more and more money. And the production company that made this film started a small studio in, I believe, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So, anyway, this Mario Brothers movie was written by Parker Bennett, Terry Runta, and Ed Solomon. And Ed Solomon was one of the guys that worked on the Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure movies, so that's kind of funny. Originally, the script had more of a fantasy bent, and what happened is they decided to make it sort of more like a weird, like, Blade Runner movie for kids. And if you like the Super Mario Brothers movie, I highly recommend you check out Super Mario Brothers The Movie Archive website at www.smbmovie.com. They got, you know, interviews with a lot of the cast and crew and old versions of the script that are more fantasy-based, that are a lot more interesting than the movie that ended up being made. That being said, I don't hate the Super Mario Brothers movie, but it's one of those things, it doesn't quite work, and you have Bob Hoskins as Mario and a very young John Leguizamo as Luigi, and I think that relationship works. You buy them as brothers, even though neither actor is Italian, and there's a lot of heart in their performance. Dennis Hopper as Bowser, the King Koopa, is okay. And nothing in this movie looks like the video games, except for when Mario and Luigi get their red and green suits. It's such a stretch. I almost wish this would have just been a cartoon, but it's very unique. And to give you an idea, basing off of boxofficemojo.com for a minute, the budget of Super Mario Brothers was $48 million in 1993. The budget of Jurassic Park, also released in 1993, was $63 million. So that's a difference in budget estimated of about $15 million. That's not very much. They spent way too much money on this thing. They should have done it for a lower budget. And it has some fun production design. If you haven't seen Super Mario Brothers, the live-action movie, in a while, I'd recommend you watch it. It's a lot of fun. And they never made a sequel. Will they ever? Maybe someday they'd have to do it as a reboot, I think. I'm a bit surprised. A lot of kids still know what Mario is. You'd think they'd want to make another movie, so keep our fingers crossed. Maybe one day they will. So, video game movies with sequels. Let's see how much we can cover here on the sequel cast in one episode. The first one of these I saw that I remember enjoying was the original Mortal Kombat film, released in 1995. This was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who has made a career of mainly directing video game movies, like the first and fourth Resident Evil movie. And so forth. And he's produced a lot of other stuff, too. So, Mortal Kombat as a movie is based loosely on characters from the first two Mortal Kombat arcade games. And if you never played Mortal Kombat, it's like a Street Fighter game. It's where you got two people fighting each other and you know special moves. But the big thing about the Mortal Kombat video game is, at the time especially, it was considered to be extremely violent. There's blood everywhere. At the end of a match, if you win two rounds, you get to do a fatality, where you put in these complicated control sequences and it plays a cartoon of your guy ripping someone's head off, or ripping out their heart and taking a bite, Indiana Jones at the Temple of Doom style. There's a lot of very interesting themes with the violence and the characters, and Mortal Kombat had a greater emphasis on narrative, even if the first movie, and indeed the first game, have a plot that's very inspired by the classic Bruce Lee film, Enter the Dragon, in that you have all these people worldwide coming to fight a tournament on an island with sort of like a beach resort setting, and yet things are more sinister than they seem. And you got all these... Yeah, the tricky part about video game movies is you have so many different characters to deal with in these video games, and they often try to cram so many characters in a movie, and the problem you get is the problem you get with several of the X-Men films, where, even though I enjoy the X-Men movies, when you have so many characters, you can only spend so much time concentrating on the strengths of each character. And because of that, characters seem underdeveloped, the whole plot often seems rushed, but this first Mortal Kombat movie, I would highly recommend. I think it's pretty good. It has, even though it's PG-13, it doesn't have all the blood of the arcade game, and I wish they would have made it R-rated, because the extreme violence is the main thing that attracts people to these Mortal Kombat games. It captures the tone pretty well. Other games, with you have this sort of pseudo-mythology. You have an extremely bizarre performance by a French actor, Christopher Lambert, as the thunder god Raiden. And he has this long gray wig, and he always speaks with a lisp. He's like, "We're going to Mortal Kombat." It's just, his delivery never quite works. I love the performance in here of the evil, shape-shifting Asian sorcerer, Shang Tsung, played by Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. And Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa is an actor who's been in a lot of things, like Rising Sun. You might recognize him if you've seen him, but he does such a good job of making Shang Tsung appear like an asshole. It's a really fun performance. The music by George S. Clinton is a lot of fun. You know, the Mortal Kombat album was a real best-selling album at the time. You have a lot of licensed techno music from groups like Orbital I really enjoy Mortal Kombat. I'm not sure if the movie makes sense if you never played the games, but as much as I like Mortal Kombat, I can't say the same about its sequel, Mortal Kombat Annihilation, at least 2 years later in 1997. They really kicked this one out the door. You know, that one you have a different director, John R. Leonetti, and he's done other movies like Butterfly Effect 2, and he's really more of a director of photography. He was a director of photography on things like Child's Play 3 and The Scorpion King, starring The Rock. So Mortal Kombat Annihilation, this one takes a lot more of the plot and characters from the second game, Mortal Kombat 2, and there's even some characters like Cyrax and stuff from Mortal Kombat 3. At this point in the video games, things get kind of convoluted. You have a lot of robot ninja characters, which always kind of confused me. I only really played the first three Mortal Kombat games, and then the brand new Mortal Kombat game on PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, simply called Mortal Kombat, is fantastic. It's a great update with the graphics and the music and the blood, and it's a lot of fun. I'd recommend buying that if you ever like a fighting game. It's good to play with your buddies over. But the movie Mortal Kombat Annihilation, the poster says destroy all expectations, and that's kind of accurate, because the first Mortal Kombat film, I thought was a fun romp, and the second one, they cram way too many fucking characters into here. It doesn't work. It is a campy, cheesy mess. I, in fact, watched this movie at my bachelor party last year with my friends. Yeah, that's what I do at my bachelor party. I watch shitty video game movies. But it was a lot of fun, despite it being so crappy. The special effects, it's a really early movie to use CG, computer graphic effects, and they just look like shit. Like, even like a PlayStation 1 game at the time might have had more impressive graphics. The original Metal Gear Solid had better graphics than some of the animated dragons and stuff you see in Mortal Kombat Annihilation. It's a campy mess. It's sort of fun on that level, but it's, I don't know, like, most of the cast is different. You don't have Christopher Lambert as Raiden. Instead, you have James Remar, who people might recognize as playing Dexter's father on Dexter in these, like, flashback sequences. So, cannot recommend Mortal Kombat Annihilation, but definitely check out Mortal Kombat. Both of those movies are available in the United States on DVD and more recently on Blu-ray. Like to check that out on Blu-ray. The techno music in all those movies is pretty good. So you might even want to pick up one of the albums if you have a chance. If you like 90s techno, it's pretty cool. So I mentioned Mortal Kombat was, you know, one of the first ones to have a sequel. There's another fighting game series I mentioned called Street Fighter, and Street Fighter is very popular. Street Fighter 2 in particular was the video game that really kicked things off, where you got characters from around the world, or fighting in locations around the world, and they never focused on plot very much like the Mortal Kombat games, although you have little ending cartoons that are kind of cute, and more interestingly to me, the different stages are in different parts of the world, so like a Russian dude might have his Russian stage, and the composers of the game make the music sound specifically Russian-sounding. So you're almost getting a stereotypical education in world music listening to the soundtrack of a Street Fighter 2. But the first Street Fighter movie was simply called Street Fighter, released in 94, so that's a year before Mortal Kombat, which came out in 1995. Street Fighter starred Jean-Claude Van Damme as Guile, so a Frenchman playing like a hardcore American guy. That's kind of weird. The muscles from Brussels, you know. Jean-Claude Van Damme, perhaps he's Belgian, not French. I'm not really sure. I don't know too much about Jean-Claude Van Damme. But his accent is always a bit shaky. Him coming off playing a hardcore American dude in this movie working for the Allied Nations. That casting doesn't really work, and yet you have a very fantastically campy performance by Raul Julia, who people might remember as Gomez in the two Addams Family movies, as M. Bison, the evil dictator of the country of Shadowloo. This was his last role, sadly. He was such a great actor, but he died, you know, I think he was only in his 50s. Let's see what Raul Julia died of, listeners. he, I believe it might have been cancer. It truly doesn't matter. It's very sad that Raul Julia died. And when I was a kid, I got to see him on stage perform the titular role of Don Quixote in the musical Man de la Mancha in Washington, D.C. And he was great on stage that, too. It's a shame he was never in a real movie of that musical. But tremendously talented man. Raul Julia took the Street Fighter movie just because his kids were crazy about the video game. They even told him his face looked like M. Bison. So, again, like Mortal Kombat, the Street Fighter live-action movie has such a too many characters in it. But fortunately, writer and director Steven E. D'Souza, who he was also a writer in like Schwarzenegger movies like Commando and The Running Man, he has a sense of humor in the movie. It's campy, and it sort of knows it. And it is PG-13, but the Street Fighter games always had less of an emphasis on blood, and that even sticks with the latest version, which I think is called like Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. The Street Fighter series of video games is infamous for having a zillion versions of game before they do a sequel. So like you had Street Fighter 2, Street Fighter 2 Turbo, Street Fighter 2 Championship Edition, all of this nonsense, all these different remakes of the same game. The Street Fighter movie, it's kind of a tough sit-through, it's a little bit boring, but Raul Julia as M. Bison is a lot of fun to watch, and they made a really shitty video game based off this movie for PlayStation 1 called Street Fighter the Movie, the Video Game, and it's like a Street Fighter game, but with Mortal Kombat-style graphics, where you just, they took photos of the actors doing the moves, and so it's like Street Fighter, but looks really choppy. It's a very bizarre game, but that's kind of fun to play, too. You might have more fun with that than with the movie. So while the original Street Fighter movie is a campy mess, it took 15 years thereabouts for Capcom to produce a sequel, Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li. I saw this with my friends on my birthday. It came out in February 2009, and we all went out and had some drinks afterwards, and Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li is a real piece of shit, even for a video game movie. The idea is the original Street Fighter movie, you know, didn't really do that well at the box, and it did okay at the box office, but it wasn't super, super successful, and it was campy, and a lot of people made fun of it. Certainly the Street Fighter movie was more profitable than the Super Mario Brothers movie. At any rate, they decided Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li would be more serious in tone, and it had a $50 million budget and only grossed a $12 million, thereabouts, $12.7 million worldwide. So I'm sure on home video it did okay. I think it probably was profitable in the long run, but not to the extent they would like. And I think the Street Fighter movie is still strong. It was just a really shitty movie with a real Z-level cast. It was directed by Andrzej Bartkowiak, who directed another video game movie, Doom, based off the PC game, and that one starred The Rock. But Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li, the most famous actor in here is probably, you have Chris Klein, one of the guys from the American Pie movies, as a cop in this movie. You have Tabu from the Black Eyed Peas as Vega, a Spanish guy with claws. And the actress they do as Chun-Li, I have a big issue with. So Chun-Li is a Chinese character, and she's trying to avenge her father in the video games, and they keep that thread in the movie. Okay, fine. That's not the most creative plot, but whatever. We can go with it. But Kristen Kreuk, I'm sure I mispronounced that, you know, is best known as being Lena Lane in the TV series Smallville. And she is half Chinese, and she looks extremely, extremely Caucasian. I wish they would have picked an actress with more Asian features. Perhaps I'm sounding a bit racially insensitive saying that, but it really does take me out of a movie when a character is called Chun-Li and looks pretty much like a white girl. I understand the actress is half Asian. She does an okay to poor job as Chun-Li in the movie. But that casting doesn't really work. I wish they would have gone with an Asian actress. I felt the actress they used in the old Street Fighter movie, who was Min Na, she was an actress in stuff like Joy Luck Club, you know. I thought she was a better Chun-Li than Kristen Kreuk in Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li. This movie's a bore. It's a piece of shit. Michael Clark Duncan as Balrog is okay. The guy they have as M. Bison is a really weird-looking actor. He has these arresting, almost like silver-color eyes. His name is Neil McDonough. He was in Minority Report. He was in a recent Sci-Fi Channel TV movie that was a take on Wizard of Oz, where he played the Tin Man. I think it just was called Tin Man, as a matter of fact. Chris Klein is hilarious in this movie. I don't think he was trying to be, as this cop called Charlie. And that cop character, according to the lore of the video game, Charlie Nash, is a partner of the dude that later gets turned into Blanka, this big green monster. If you haven't played the video game, probably the last 2 minutes of what I talked about made no sense. But highlights are, do not watch Street Fighter Legend of Chun-Li. Just go on YouTube and look up the Chris Klein clips, because he's pretty funny. But the original Street Fighter movie kind of holds up okay. It's kind of fun for a laugh. I prefer the original Mortal Kombat movie, personally. So another early example of a video game movie with a sequel is actually a cartoon. Squaresoft, at the time, I think now the company is called Square Enix, because the people that made Final Fantasy merged with Enix, the company that makes Dragon Quest, Dragon Warrior games, all these complicated Japanese role-playing games. They spent a shitload of money opening a CG studio in Hawaii, having an American and Japanese staff, and made a big budget movie called Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within in 2001. I worked at a movie theater in Atlanta, Georgia when this came out, and nobody saw this movie. This movie lost a lot of money. And it's kind of a shame, because visually, I think it still holds up okay. Like, the CG in this for the time, at the time, you had stuff like Shrek 1 coming out, which I think looks kind of shitty looking today. But Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within visually still holds up. The budget for this movie, and you got to keep in mind part of the budget was starting up a brand new CG studio, was $137 million. And worldwide, it made $85 million. But, so I don't know if this movie ever even eked a profit. If it did, it must have taken them a really long time. You had an all-star voice acting cast of people like Alec Baldwin, James Woods, Donald Sutherland, and again, Min Na plays the lead in this, and she played Chun-Li in the Street Fighter movie from the mid-90s that we just were talking about. Steve Buscemi also does a voice in this, and the music is by Elliot Goldenthal, and it's actually kind of an interesting score. And it's co-directed by Moto Sakakibara and Hironobu Sakaguchi. And Sakaguchi, in fact, was the producer on the first 10 Final Fantasy games. So what are the Final Fantasy video games? I've played all of them, pretty much, not all the spin-offs. But they're Japanese role-playing games that typically take, I don't know, around like 50 hours a piece to beat, depending on which one you're playing. They're, even though they have sequels, they're not directly related to each other, except they often have these yellow bird ostrich creatures called chocobos and a character named Cid in them. And otherwise, they either run the gamut from a fantasy genre in their earlier games to the later ones, more science fiction. And along those lines, this Final Fantasy Spirits Within is a science fiction film. The plot's very convoluted. It feels like you're dropped into hour 65 of a 66-hour video game. It's a bit difficult to get the grasp on a sort of metaphysical science fiction plot. But I think visually this movie looks stunning, has a nice score. It's a bit cheesy. I don't think the plot entirely works. They should have gone with kind of a simpler story. But visually, it's quite beautiful at times. And I think it's pretty interesting. Now, film critic Roger Ebert cites this as one of his, you know, favorite CG cartoon movies, just because of the visual look to it. So, and this movie was controversial at the time because you had they had the actors and stuff, even though it's CG, look really photorealistic, even for the time. And I think now it even holds up pretty well because a lot of the movie is in shadows, so you don't see the highlights. But you look at how Final Fantasy Spirits Within, the CG movie, looked. And video games today look how this like $130 million CG movie looked back in 2001. So that's really quite an accomplishment. It was really ahead of its time. Do I think it would have made more money if it came out in theaters now? No. But they made a sequel to this because the video games of Final Fantasy are pretty popular. That's a strong name. Although you got to keep in mind, a popular video game series does not translate into big gross at the box office, big DVD sales. And that's something they haven't seemed to quite have learned. But the sequel they made to Final Fantasy Spirits Within is titled Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, which had nothing to do with Spirits Within. It was a spin-off of the Final Fantasy Advent Children, or Final Fantasy VII video game. Final Fantasy VII is one of the more popular installments of the series. It has a post-apocalyptic science fiction, Blade Runner, Mad Max kind of feel at times. So if you hadn't played Final Fantasy VII, you'd be extremely lost watching this movie. Again, it's a CG movie. It was released direct to video. And even though it was released direct to video, it's something that is a lot of fun, I think. It's a movie that, if you know the video games a lot, expands on that story, has a great, great musical score in there that takes music from the video game but kind of remixes it, performs some of them as piano pieces, does some epic orchestral arrangements of like the Sephiroth theme and all these things. So watch Final Fantasy VII Advent Children. Like, the plot doesn't quite knock it out of the park, but you must play that video game if you want to make sense of that movie at all. But visually, it's pretty stunning. Both those Final Fantasy CG movies are stunning. If you have no familiarity with those video games, and if you don't, while you're listening to me talk about video game movies in this special sequel cast episode, you'd probably be better off watching Final Fantasy The Spirits Within. Both Final Fantasy The Spirits Within and Final Fantasy VII Advent Children are available in the U.S. on DVD and Blu-ray. So before we talk more on movies based off of video games that have sequels and some that don't, I want to give a shout-out to some people on Twitter. I kind of threw out the question out there to some of my buddies on there. What do you think about video game movies? What sort of thoughts do you have? And I got some responses. So if you follow video game news online, you might be familiar with a website called Destructoid. They look at video games from a, I find, a humorous perspective, kind of like grunge, like punk in their tone. And so I was asking some of the writers on Destructoid their thoughts about video game movies. And Jim Sterling has a great article on Destructoid. And he mentions the original Mortal Kombat live-action movie, which I just talked about, as being the best video game movie because the fight scenes are decent, and although it's camp, it captures the feel of a game, and I think that's a really good point. I agree with him there. Mortal Kombat, the first live-action movie, is one of my favorite video game movies out there. Colette Bennett, also of Destructoid, and she also writes for Tomopop, which is run by the same people that run Destructoid, but it focuses on Japanese toys for the most part. She mentioned Silent Hill as her favorite video game movie, and I agree with that, too. Silent Hill is my number one video game movie, and it's getting a sequel either this year or next year called Silent Hill 3D Revelation. And that sequel is going to star Malcolm McDowell and Carrie-Anne Moss and kind of focus on the plot of the third game, Silent Hill 3, but tying into the first movie with the younger girl being an older character. Yeah, it's confusing, but so are the Silent Hill games. I also got a great response from film critic for The Oregonian, Sean Levy. And his thought on video game movies is that the original Tron movie was okay. He dug the look and feel of the first CG Final Fantasy film. And Wing Commander was dumb fun. You know, it's interesting. Can you call Tron a video game movie? Like, the video game came out at the same time. It's certainly a movie inspired by video games. And along those lines, we were kind of talking a bit more. I mentioned I love a David Cronenberg film set in sort of the world of things like Ultima Online, about those, or World of Warcraft, sort of set in an online video game universe called Existence. And to that, Sean Levy responded, "Oh, we can include make-believe video games. Clockers has a good one." I know Clockers is a Spike Lee movie. I have not seen it. I need to see a Spike Lee movie, period. I haven't been meaning to do that for quite some time. Maybe I'll start with Clockers. And he said there's an early version of something sort of like Google in a movie called Until the End of the World. I have not heard of that, Mr. Levy, but Levy, I don't know. I'm probably mispronouncing it every single time. So there we go. That's some great feedback I got about video game movies, which we're talking about right now on the SequelCast, and that feedback was from Sean Levy of the Oregonian, and earlier it was Colette Bennett and Jim Sterling of Destructoid fame. So, back to my thoughts on some video game movies. We've covered a lot of the big ones, but when you look at the bigger scope of things, you look at which video game movies have been the most successful, i.e., which ones have the most sequels, you have to give it up for the live-action Resident Evil movies. And, you know, the first one was really low-budget. It was before you had sort of this reboot of zombies in pop culture, where you had something with, you know, 28 Days Later, or the comic book, and now the popular TV show The Walking Dead. You know, zombies are very much in vogue. But when that first Resident Evil film came out in 2002, it was like, no one's really tried to do a zombie movie in a while. So it seemed really gutsy at the time. And it's written and directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who was the same director on the first live-action Mortal Kombat movie. And it stars Mila Jovovich, and who's a model who is maybe better known as the female that's practically silent the whole time in The Fifth Element with Bruce Willis. It also stars Michelle Rodriguez, who had a small part in Avatar as one of the pilots. You'd recognize her if you saw her. She was also in Lost, the TV show as well, I believe, for a few episodes. And Resident Evil, it's pretty interesting. I've played bits and pieces of the games, and the only ones I can actually control worth a damn are the ones on the Wii, Resident Evil Umbrella Chronicles and Resident Evil Darkside Chronicles. And those ones sort of retold the story of the first few games, but as a light gun game where just you're shooting zombies the whole time. Because the old Resident Evil games had really poor controls. They controlled like a tank, and I mean, that's how games, just 3D games, controlled at the time. A third-person perspective. It was difficult to aim on someone. You frequently die at very cheap deaths. I love the setting and the stories of the older games, but I find their gameplay doesn't hold up so well. That's my opinion. And the Resident Evil movies take a weird amount of inspiration from the video game. So this first one, Resident Evil, it's meant to be a kind of prequel, if you will, to the first game, or maybe it goes on concurrent to the first video game, but you have no real characters from the video game exactly. But Mila Jovovich plays a character called Alice, which is first of many Alice in Wonderland references in these Resident Evil films. And it's kind of a mystery, a little bit like Memento, where she wakes up, she doesn't know what's happening, and at the first few scenes, she's set in a mansion, and it looks just like, and it's meant to be the same mansion you're in the first Resident Evil video game. It's very effective with the statues and the long table and the dinner room. It's more exciting than I'm making it sound. But it's about a secret subterranean lair of the evil Umbrella Corporation and how they developed something called the T-Virus that causes people to mutate into zombies. And she's sort of trapped in this underground lair underneath this house on the outskirts of Raccoon City. And she's trying to figure out with a bunch of military people how to escape. And it's all run by an evil computer called the Red Queen. And does she live or does she die? Well, I won't say, but, you know, they made 3 more Resident Evil movies, so take your pick. The second Resident Evil film was released just 2 years later in 2004, called Resident Evil
Apocalypse. And out of all the Resident Evil movies, this one most closely followed the plot of, you know, Resident Evil 3, Nemesis, and a bit of Resident Evil 2. This one, although it was still written by Paul W.S. Anderson, was directed by Alexander Witt, who was a second-unit director on a lot of different films. But Resident Evil Apocalypse takes place in a city, has characters like Jill Valentine from the video game. It captures the goofy, campy feel of the video games, perhaps not so serious, in the video games of Resident Evil, because they're developed in Japan, where English isn't their native language. The translations and the voice acting in the video games is often hilariously sloppy. And they don't quite go to that level of campy in these Resident Evil movies, but they maintain an atmosphere of dread, which you get in the games. You don't know if a zombie is going to be around the corner. You might walk past a window, and you hear glass breaking, and these demon dogs jump out, and they're trying to rip your throat out, and you got 2 seconds to run to the next door, or turn around and stab them with a knife, or whatever. It's that moment of, you know, being scared and panicking and running is a big focus of the Resident Evil video games. And the Resident Evil movies do that with varying success, but I like Resident Evil Apocalypse, the second movie, and I think it's a lot like a game. A lot of people hate it, because they kind of cram a lot of characters in there and keep on going. One of the more humorous actors in this is Mike Epps. Plays kind of comedic relief, and I think does a good job. And Odette Fehr, which people might remember as the mummy from that trilogy of mummy movies with Brendan Fraser, is very charismatic and has a fun part in this film as well. Now, the third Resident Evil movie is called Resident Evil Afterlife, or Resident Evil Extinction, I'm sorry, came out 3 years later, 2007. Now, Resident Evil Extinction takes a very Mad Max spin on the franchise. We just talked about Mad Max here in the sequel cast a few weeks ago. You can check out those episodes and anything else on iTunes, or just go to sequelcast.com. You can download all the stuff from there. But Resident Evil Afterlife is like zombies meet Mad Max. It's post-apocalyptic. And much like the Road Warrior, a bunch of people are trying to find a paradise, which in this case is in Alaska. And it's sort of about them coming together and trying to outrun this zombie menace that's attacking them in the desert, and later on in a sort of abandoned ruin of what used to be a Las Vegas casino. Resident Evil Extinction makes the character of Alice more psychic, more video gamey. There's scenes that rip off Empire Strikes Back, where she's meditating with a zillion boulders floating in the air. She can make a shield that blocks evil, like asteroids of fire crows. I haven't seen this film in a while. That blocks fire attacks from attacking her. It gets a bit more mystical and science fictiony, which is very much like the games. But the first two Resident Evil movies, even though they fought like a giant monster called Nemesis or the Laker, all had some more of a grounding in reality, and things get a bit more fantastical. Even though these are all, you know, horror films, action films, science fiction films, they're not, you could classify these as anything, basically. The most recent Resident Evil movie is the fourth one, Resident Evil Afterlife, which came out in 2010. Resident Evil Afterlife is one I've only caught the beginning of, but you can watch that one at least on Netflix Watch Instantly if you're living in the U.S. And I think it's okay. The beginning gets really campy, trying to tie up the series. And then it gets very melodramatic with the dialogue. Again, it features characters from the video games. And it just seemed like, from what I've seen of Afterlife, I need to see the full movie to get a whole judgment, is that they didn't have enough material in there for a movie. So they're trying to make it darker and more character-based. And it just, for me, felt really boring. But I need to sit there and finish it. Maybe it gets better at the end. Certainly Wesker, at the beginning, the sort of conspiracy theory figure that keeps on coming back from the dead in the video games, is well portrayed in the prologue sequence to Resident Evil Afterlife. Has a lot of goofy juice to it, sort of like the Crank movies, a lot of fun in there. And they're actually making a fifth live-action Resident Evil movie called Resident Evil Retribution for 2012. And as far as I know, I think it's either going to be a reboot, or it might even be a prequel, sort of explaining what was Alice like before she got experimented on by the Umbrella Corporation and got these superpowers. So I've talked a little bit about the Resident Evil movies, some feedback from, you know, listeners of the show, and stuff about other, you know, the fighting game movies, Mortal Kombat and Street Fighter and the Final Fantasy stuff. And but you look at video game sequels and who has directed the most? And by far, the video game the director who has directed the most video game movies is an infamous German director, Uwe Boll. You might be listening to this and wondering, who is Uwe Boll? Well, let me tell you. I think a lot of times he's unfairly judged. He is a German director who's directed a lot of movies in Germany, starting with a big one. The one that made him famous in Germany was something called German Fried Movie, a sketch comedy movie inspired by the American film Kentucky Fried Movie. And he got his first job doing an American production with the first House of the Dead movie in 2003. And it stars such quirky character actors as Jürgen Prochnow, better known from like Das Boot or some other movies. He's done a lot of... He's a very strong presence. You'd recognize him if you saw him. And Clint Howard, the brother of famed director and actor Ron Howard. Clint Howard's the one that's in the Austin Powers movies always. He has screwed up teeth. He has a really weird head. He looks like a little troll. He plays the titular character in the horror comedy movie, The Ice Cream Man. Or is it The Ice Cream Man? I don't quite remember. But anyway, House of the Dead, it's based on a series of video games where you got a gun and you're shooting zombies. Kind of like what Resident Evil did many years later with their series of games called Resident Evil Dark Side Chronicles on the Wii. So, the House of the Dead, you know, you got people. The video games are about, like, federal agents doing a raid on an abandoned mansion, trying to take down a head bad guy and defeating these, like, cyborgs and zombies. The plot's not very important. It's very silly. The game, I wouldn't say it's creepy, but those games are certainly bloody. I think they're fun. And this House of the Dead movie 2003, which is Uwe Boll's first American film, mind you, not his first film, as a lot of people assume, is campy and ridiculous. I don't think it helps that Uwe Boll, you know, helps write these things in English as in his first language. He knows how to crank out movies really, really quickly, for better or for worse. But he can get things done on a budget, on cheap, and on time. And that's more than you can say for a lot of other directors. You know, people like Steven Spielberg hasn't done a movie in 3 or 4 years, but he's coming out with 2 this year. Uwe Boll often produces and directs and all these things, 2 or 3 movies a year. It's like nuts. Like, you don't see that very often with movies, although a lot of his stuff has gone direct to video. So the first House of the Dead movie, I think it's a campy delight. A lot of other people really hate it. 2 years later, he followed that up with another video game movie in 2005 called Alone in the Dark. Alone in the Dark was a series of computer games where, at least in the first one, you play the kind of you play a detective with thick glasses, and he's investigating a sort of empty house. Again, very much what they kind of took off later in the first Resident Evil game, which was several years after Alone in the Dark, the computer game. And it's kind of like a bunch of monsters are in a house, and there's some Lovecraftian overtones. Well, Uwe Boll, in the 2000 film Alone in the Dark, makes it an action movie starring Christian Slater and Stephen Dorff, and Tara Reid as a scientist. And it just gets so ridiculous. I mean, the Uwe Boll movies, people have compared him as being a modern-day Ed Wood, like the director of Plan 9 from Outer Space. His movies, I think, are hilarious. And they're often very dark in tone and can sometimes be troubling with these things. I do want to correct myself. Earlier I said House of the Dead was Uwe Boll's first American film. That's not true, but House of the Dead was his first American video game film. Before that, he did things like Sanctimony, Blackwoods, and Uwe Boll did a really interesting film called Heart of America that is about, loosely based on the Columbine shootings in the United States in a high school in Colorado. So, Alone in the Dark is a weird action movie starring Christian Slater. He fights these monsters. It doesn't really work, but it got a direct-to-video sequel called Alone in the Dark 2. It came out in 2008. In this one, the main character, who used to be played by Christian Slater, is played by an Asian actor. And they clearly had no money. There's even not that many zombies. It's about a witch in the woods and in Central Park. And it's really lame. It stars Rick Yune instead of Christian Slater. Last time I checked, those actors don't look very much alike. Also, earlier I mentioned House of the Dead, and Uwe Boll didn't direct, but he produced a sequel called House of the Dead 2. No Guts, No Glory. And I haven't seen it. I'm kind of curious to see if it's as silly. But I've had people come to me and say, you know, Matt, I really liked House of the Dead 1 better than 2, even though it's an Uwe Boll film. You know, I mentioned Resident Evil had 4 movies, but there's another video game series that has 3 movies, and those are all directed by Uwe Boll. This other one I'm going to talk about, that is. The first one is called Blood Rain, based on a video game about a sexy female vampire with big boobs. And in the video game, she fights like Nazis and all these things, and monsters. I only played the first one very briefly, but, you know, it was released on PlayStation 2 and Xbox, and they were big hits at the time. Well, the first Blood Rain movie, Uwe Boll decides to make a prequel, sort of like a Lord of the Rings ripoff taking place, filmed in Romania or Czechoslovakia or one of those countries in the area of Europe. I'm sorry, I don't have the exact information in front of me. So if you if I got that wrong, send me an email at sequelcast@gmail.com or check out the Facebook page. Just look up SequelCast. We'll be there. Or send me something on Twitter at SequelCast. So first Blood Rain, medieval setting, has Michelle Rodriguez, who was again in the first Resident Evil movie. It also has Ben Kingsley as a vampire and Michael Madsen, who's been a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies. He was the cowboy guy they had to kill in Kill Bill 1 and 2. You might recognize him from that. So Blood Rain tries to go for an epic scope, certainly one of the bigger budgets of Uwe Boll's films, and I think this is one of his better films. It feels more like a normal movie. It has hilarious cameos of Billy Zane plays someone. If you saw The Phantom, he was the lead in that. And Meatloaf plays a vampire lord covered in topless wenches. It's a riot. The second Blood Rain film came out 2 years later, called Blood Rain 2 Deliverance. And it takes place in the Wild Wild West. None of the video games ever took place in the Wild Wild West. It has a different actress as Blood Rain. All these Blood Rain movies have different actresses in the lead. And, it's even though it's set in the Wild West, it's slow, it has some weird humor. You know, there's a joke at the end where it says, life is like a penis. When it's, sometimes it's soft, sometimes it's hard, or something like that. It's not so good. The latest Blood Rain movie finally is set in the setting of the video games, called Blood Rain 3, The Third Reich, which features the, Dampier, half-human, half-vampire, sexy lady, Blood Rain, fighting the Nazis. And they're making a spinoff of that that's a spoof called Blubberella, about a morbidly obese woman who's dressed like Blood Rain, who I think is called Blood Rain, fighting Nazis, filmed on the same set as Blood Rain 3. Uwe Boll is a riot. I highly recommend you see one of his films. There's several of them on Netflix. Watch instantly. If you like campy stuff, I think you'll enjoy them, but they often have quite a nihilistic viewpoint and can be quite dark and disturbing at times. So, I've talked a lot about video game sequels here, so let me take a quick break. Here in this special episode of the SequelCast, we've talked about movies based on video games, or some people call them video game movies. There's been a lot, and there's a lot more to come that are coming out, but I thought I'd mention a few that are still worth mentioning that, while not having a sequel, I'm going to talk about them briefly, because video game movies are so numerous and people have such strong opinions about them. It's kind of fun to talk about, even if it's breaking format kind of briefly. So there's a movie that, that Sean Levy talked about from The Oregonian. He mentioned he thought Wing Commander was dumb fun, and I'm quite familiar with the Wing Commander video games. They're a series of computer games, although some were released on Super Nintendo. We were a pilot, and sort of a an arcade-y flight simulator, as it were, and you were fighting these evil aliens called the Kilrathi, these evil kitty cat aliens. I know it sounds lame when I'm describing it, but in some of the video games, the design looked very cool. They look kind of like evil Muppets, and in fact, it was done by the Jim Henson people, some of the effects in the video games. And, you know, the video games became so popular, it also reached into a time when you had CD-ROMs on computers, and they had live-action sequences with movie stars. So in the video games, you had Mark Hamill, the guy that plays Luke Skywalker in the old Star Wars movies, was the lead. And Malcolm McDowell, the lead guy from Clockwork Orange, was in there as one of the commanders. And you had sort of an all-star cast. Also Tom Wilson, who was Biff in Back to the Future, played the goofy rascal pilot Maniac. So it was an all-star cast, at least by computer game standards, for the Wing Commander movie. Or for the Wing Commander video game. But for the Wing Commander movie, they decided to do a reboot. Let's tell an origin story of a pilot, Christopher Blair, and the Earth Confederacy's war against the evil alien Kilrathi race. With all younger actors, you had Freddie Prinze Jr. Instead of Mark Hamill. Instead of Tom Wilson as Maniac, you had Matthew Lillard. And a lot of European actors, including Jürgen Prochnow, as a character called Paladin, who was played in the part in the video game, was played by John Rhys-Davies. So, I mean, it's difficult when you've played video games that have, you know, real filmed live-action sequences with actors, and you've got to watch it with a bunch of younger, you know, actors in their late 20s, early 30s, trying to pretend like they're high school students. And while the idea of these guys going to Flight Academy and having a lot of really big adventures sounds entertaining, these actors just can't pull it off. And also, the Kilrathi, the evil cat aliens in the Wing Commander live-action movie, which came out in 1999, look like Ninja Turtles. They're even bald. They don't look much like kitty cats at all. They don't look threatening. And apparently, and the weird thing is, well, why did the Wing Commander movie mess up so much? Yes, it does take tropes from, you know, like World War II flight pilot movies. You know, it has a similar structure even to Pearl Harbor, even so as much as having the alien Kilrathi, you know, dive bomb a military target, much like what really happened in Pearl Harbor with the Japanese bombing the Americans. So you have this setup, and the movie was directed and co-written by Christopher Roberts, who created, produced, and, you know, co-wrote the entire Wing Commander computer game series, at least up until the fourth game in the series. So you think if anybody would know Wing Commander, it was him. And yet he messed it all up. He didn't have a big budget to go with. This movie opened, I think, in March or something, a few months before Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, came out. So you had that going against it. I don't think Wing Commander, despite being a best-selling computer game series, had huge name recognition. So while I think that universe of Wing Commander is a lot of fun, it's so much better done in the video games. If you want to see what I'm talking about, an easy way is if you have a PlayStation 3 and have a membership on it, and or up on their PlayStation Network, you can purchase the PS1 version of Wing Commander 4. The Price of Freedom, which is often considered one of the better games in the series, and that has all these live-action sequences with Mark Hamill and so forth that are just so well done. I'd say play, but the Wing Commander movie has its charm. It's currently only available out on DVD, no Blu-ray out yet, at least in the U.S. So I've talked my ass off about a bunch of video game movies. I think if they did a Halo video game movie, that would do extremely well. That's a really well-known property. They've done enough of those now where I think that could be popular, and they've been trying to get one off the ground for a while, and it never quite happened. A video game movie coming up, you know, I mentioned Blood Rain, The Third Reich, which is coming out in video in the U.S. pretty soon. You also have Uwe Boll did a movie, In the Name of the King, A Dungeon Siege Tale, starring Jason Statham. It's getting a sequel, In the Name of the King 2. He didn't have the rights to the Dungeon Siege video game name anymore, and that sequel is going to star... It's going to star Dolph Lundgren, who played the Russian evil boxer in Rocky IV, who played Ivan Drago in Rocky IV. So we've talked about video game movies. I think I've done a good job of it. If you want feedback, you know, Twitter @SequelCast or look SequelCast on Facebook. That's the best way to reach us. Next week on the Sequel Cast, we'll start a two-episode look at the Basic Instinct duology, the film that made Sharon Stone famous. For the Sequel Cast, this is Matt. Thank you for listening, and tune in next week when we talk about Basic Instinct 1 with Sabrina and possibly a special guest. See you later, kiddos. Ciao.